Picture George Washington staring back at you from a dollar bill. What do you see? A marble statue? A mythical figure who never told a lie? For nearly 250 years, Washington's story has been told by what Alexis Coe calls thigh men, male biographers obsessed with proving his virility, defending his masculinity, and constructing elaborate myths that have little to do with the actual man. These historians gave us wooden teeth, false, cherry trees, invented, and a flawless hero, impossible. But what happens when we strip away the mythology? We discover something far more interesting, a deeply ambitious, sometimes contradictory, remarkably human figure whose greatness came not from perfection, but from his ability to rise above his own limitations at crucial moments. For generations, biographers have spun tales that say more about American mythology than historical truth. The wooden teeth story? Washington actually wore dentures crafted from ivory, animal teeth, and, disturbingly, teeth purchased from his own enslaved workers at below-market rates. His Mount Vernon ledger meticulously records paying 122 shillings for 9 teeth from enslaved individuals, while dentists typically charged clients twice that amount. The famous silver dollar toss across the Potomac? Physically impossible, given the river's mile-wide span at Mount Vernon. The cherry tree confession? Pure fabrication by Parson Weems, who brazenly promised his publisher the biography would sell like flaxseed. Even Washington's supposed devout Christianity was exaggerated. The Valley Forge prayer scene was invented whole cloth. Washington's path to greatness began with inherited privilege, 10 enslaved people, and Ferry Farm when his father died. At 19, he contracted smallpox in Barbados, leaving facial scars but granting lifelong immunity that would prove crucial during the Revolution. His military career started disastrously. At 22, he led a skirmish that killed French diplomat de Jumonville, sparking the French and Indian War. The volley fired by a young Virginian in the backwoods of America set the world on fire, wrote Horace Walpole. A month later, de Jumonville's half-brother overwhelmed Washington at Fort Necessity, forcing his surrender. Yet failure became opportunity. When Washington's journal was published as propaganda, his celebrity grew throughout the colonies. His real education came from recognizing that colonial officers would always remain second class under British rule, a bitter lesson that planted revolutionary seeds. Then came Martha. In 1758, severe dysentery forced Washington to seek medical attention in Williamsburg, where he met wealthy widow Martha Custis. Her inheritance was staggering: 18,000 acres, approximately 290 enslaved people, and substantial investments. They married on January 6, 1759. Washington chose civilian clothes over his military uniform, signaling his intention to become a Virginia gentleman. But his old uniform hung in the closet, waiting. In 1772, 13 years after leaving military service, Washington commissioned a portrait in his old Virginia militia uniform, now snug around his midsection. The sword and musket weren't nostalgic props. They declared he remained bent to arms. As Parliament's restrictions mounted, the Stamp Act, Townshend Acts, Intolerable Acts, Washington radicalized. "Parliament hath no more right to put their hands into my pocket without my consent than I have to put my hands into yours," he declared. By September 1775, Washington rode to Philadelphia for the Second Continental Congress, making himself visible, visiting 31 homes, appearing in churches, drinking in taverns. His soldier-like air distinguished him. When delegates needed a Continental Army commander, Washington offered clear advantages: military experience, wealth allowing unpaid service, and Virginia heritage uniting North and South. On June 15, 1775, the decision was unanimous. Washington wrote Martha as if signing his death warrant, claiming, "He'd used every endeavor in my power to avoid the appointment." But his ready uniform and collection of military hero busts suggested otherwise. After 16 years of civilian life, he yearned for recognition. This unanimous election offered the ultimate opportunity to distinguish himself by achievement, not birth or marriage. Washington lost more battles than any victorious general in modern history. facing Britain's largest invasion force, 400 ships carrying 32,000 troops, he commanded 19,000 men with little artillery, no cavalry, and no naval support. His genius lay in diplomacy, propaganda, and espionage. When Colonel James Patterson met him, he stood as if he was before something supernatural. Washington declared independence wasn't negotiable. The Americans had not offended, and therefore they needed no pardon. Washington weaponized information, compiling accounts of enemy brutality that distinguished brave Americans contending for liberty from infamous mercenary ravagers. These reports spread nationwide through newspapers read aloud in meeting houses and taverns. He convinced Congress to fund the New Jersey Journal, over which he had total editorial control. In 1778, he established the Culper Ring under Major Benjamin Talmadge, using invisible ink developed by Sir James Jay. Abraham Woodhull made dead drops on his farm, with Anna Strong signaling readiness through laundry on her clothesline. Smallpox threatened the Continental Army more than British forces, with 20% of troops suffering or dying by 1776. Despite Virginia's laws against inoculation, Washington ordered compulsory mass inoculations, reducing fatalities from 17% to 1%. Washington's 8-year absence from Mount Vernon exacted a heavy toll. In 1781, when the HMS Savage approached his estate, Lund Washington supplied provisions rather than risk destruction, a decision that enraged George, who preferred his house burned. 17 enslaved people escaped to the British ship, responding to Lord Dunmore's proclamation offering freedom. The irony was stark. The man fighting for liberty held others in bondage. The war aged him dramatically. The 44-year-old general with auburn hair emerged at 52 with gray hair, deep creases, rheumatism, failing eyesight, and deteriorating teeth. Yet Washington masterfully used his declining health to quell the Newburgh Mutiny, where unpaid officers planned mass desertion. Donning new spectacles during his address, he humbly remarked, "I have grown gray in your service and now find myself growing blind," instantly diffusing the rebellion through vulnerability rather than force. On December 23, 1783, he resigned his commission before Congress, his hands shaking and voice ragged. The audience wept. Retirement brought frustrations, collecting debts, managing properties, handling overwhelming correspondence. By 1787, the nation faltered under weak Articles of Confederation. The first presidential election was America's least dramatic. No debates, no campaigns, just a foregone conclusion. Washington appeared on every ballot, receiving 69 electoral votes. His journey to New York became a triumphant procession where he bowed to the people rather than accepting their bows. As president, Washington navigated crushing debt and ethical crises. Hamilton's central bank proposal angered Southerners until Jefferson brokered a compromise for a Southern capital. In Philadelphia, Washington circumvented Pennsylvania's Gradual Abolition Act by rotating his enslaved staff between Philadelphia and Mount Vernon every 6 months to prevent their freedom. When France declared war on Britain in 1793, Washington issued a neutrality proclamation, recognizing America's military weakness. His greatest overreaction came during the 1794 Whiskey Rebellion, when he deployed 12,000 troops against distillers protesting an excise tax, becoming the only president to personally lead forces against Americans. Troops arrived to find no rebels. Even Madison called it perhaps the greatest error of his political life. By 1796, Washington's popularity had waned. Congress refused to adjourn for his birthday. His final letter to Jefferson ended their correspondence. His farewell address warned against foreign entanglements and partisan politics, ironically, as he'd grown increasingly partisan himself. At Mount Vernon, he maintained rigid routines, riding at daybreak, dining between 2 and 3 p.m., retiring by 9 p.m. On December 12, 1799, Washington rode his farms for 5 hours through rain, hail, and snow, then joined Martha for dinner in wet clothes. By Friday, a sore throat developed. Doctors performed bloodletting, blistering, and induced vomiting, treatments that worsened his condition. His final words at 10 p.m., "'Tis well." Modern narratives praise Washington for freeing his slaves, but context matters. Unlike Franklin, who freed his slaves during his lifetime and petitioned Congress to abolish slavery in 1790, Washington only stipulated freedom after Martha's death. Fearing slaves who knew freedom awaited them, Martha freed them in 1800. When she died in 1802, her 150 dower slaves were divided among grandchildren, separating 20 families. Washington's greatness lies not in perfection, but in rising above limitations and placing country above self, which makes his contradictory story worth remembering.